The Gift of the Givers Foundation has been helping thousands of South Africans in times of need. Disasters, along with people in other parts of the world, the Disaster Relief Organization celebrates its 31st anniversary this year. Dr. Suleiman started out with a feeding scheme from his home way back in 1992. Now the foundation is the biggest disaster response NGO of African origin on the continent. For more on this, we're joined by Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman himself, founder of Gift of the Givers. Dr. Suleiman, appreciate your time today. Congratulations on a magnificent 31 years. Can you share with us the organization's journey and some of those key milestones over the last 31 years?
Good afternoon, Hugo. Thank you very much. We started off predominantly as a disaster response agency. Over the period of time, starting off with just ordinary delivery of tents, blankets, and medicines, and then adding primary healthcare medical teams, trauma counselors, search and rescue teams, medical, canine, dogs, upgrading hospitals in damaged areas, building schools, building, supporting agriculture, putting medical teams. So we did that over a period of time, focusing predominantly on disaster intervention, locally and internationally. But in the 31-year history, we've added many more projects, boreholes, medical intervention in hospitals, infrastructure, wheelchair distribution, counseling services, winter warm, food parcels, feeding schemes, sports development, toilets at schools, audiology program schools, now they add optometry at schools. So it's been a range of development taking place over that period of time, be it rehabilitation, fodder for animals, supporting farmers. It's just a range of things that we've been doing. And with each passing time, we had more and more projects. And one of the strange, the complicated ones is hostage negotiations, which we started from 2014.
That sounds pretty interesting. I'd certainly like to hear a little bit about that. But Dr. Suleiman, for me, it's always about, I think I caught a little bit of your story on what was the inspiration to set up Gift of the Givers?
Well, it's not really my organization. You know, I didn't get up one morning and say to myself, I think I'm going to form an organization now. I met a spiritual teacher in Turkey, in Istanbul, in 1991, and subsequently went back in August 92. And the 6th of August 92, coinciding with today, on a Thursday night at 10 p.m., the spiritual teacher, after a religious program, looked at me and looked heavenwards, looked at my eye and looked heavenwards at the same time. And in fluent Turkish, and I don't speak a word of Turkish, but that night I understood every word that he said in Turkish.
Wow.
He said, my son, and I asked him that. I said, how is it possible that when you speak Turkish, and I understand, and when other people speak Turkish, I don't understand? He said, my son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable. Everything about that meeting was spiritual. The instruction was, I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name will be Waqful Waqifin, translated Gift of the Givers. You will serve all people of all races, all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation, but you will serve them unconditionally, expecting nothing in return, not even a thank you. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your lives. And it's a shortened version of exactly what happened that night, but it is a direct spiritual instruction. And he said, this is an instruction for the rest of your life, and you will know what to do. And for 31 years, I do know what to do.
Amazing. I know you obviously had no doubt in your mind when that word came to you. But how did it make you feel that you were the person that was chosen to do this work for so many across the globe?
At that point, Hugo, I didn't understand it. You know, I just thought he was talking about some kind of honorary work. I didn't expect the magnitude of what it is now. But when I met him on the other side, I believed in the man because I met him in 91 before. And fell in love with a man I don't even know. But it was a spiritual connection, and I could feel there was something very special about this man. And so when he told me that, I didn't really think much of it. And I said, okay, it will develop in time, and something will happen. You know, we'll do things here and there. But every time I met him, he would say, it will get bigger, it will get bigger, it will get bigger. In the last few years, I now understand what he meant. He also told me, in the initial stages, that everything, I won't understand everything then. I'll understand things as life carries on and things unfold over a period of time. So yes, it has been an evolution. The prayer or the calling, whatever has been instructed, falls into place. And I still don't know what you're going to see in the next 10 years.
Now, the organization is known for its commitment to hunger alleviation. How do you manage to distribute over 100,000 food parcels annually and provide thousands of meals daily?
We do much more than that now. You know, it's the team. The teams we have are committed teams, dedicated people. But of course, soup kitchens have been set up by the communities. We've seen how functional they are, and we support people doing good work. And we had to escalate that support during COVID itself, when it was level 5 lockdown, and so many people were hungry. So yes, we've been doing food parcels for a long time. We've been doing soup kitchens, but we escalated it during COVID and during the civil unrest in KZN in 2021. And now food parcels and feeding has become a normal standard post-disaster, whether it's fire, whether it's flood, because we found that when we get to the disaster, the thing that's most striking is not the fact that the house got burned or damaged. It's the fact that people are hungry. And we found the hunger is far more intense now than years previously, which means, and we already know that, there's malnutrition, there's hunger. Hunger is endemic in the country throughout because of loss of jobs, inflation, you know, the cost of food, transport. Life is very, very difficult. And it's not only for poor people. We've seen it happen in middle-class people because they've got a balance of paying their bond, their cars, the school fees, the insurance, the medical aid, and food takes a knock. And we're finding that a lot of people have food challenges in different classes in society.
Now, water scarcity is becoming an increasing concern due to climate change. And I know that you have many water-related projects that have been initiated by Gifts of the Givers. Can you talk to us about some of these?
Yes, there's various water projects. We started off in a big way. Well, not in a big way. We started off initially in 2015 with drought in the northwest, parts of Kwakwa, and it slowly expanded. In 2017, when Sutherland was in crisis and still is because of the drought, we drilled 238 boreholes to benefit sheep in that area. Then came Makanda in 2019. We drilled 15 boreholes in the area. And it bore the drilling to place throughout the Eastern Cape. We drilled boreholes in the Northern Cape, parts of Northwest, parts of KZN. We put in a lot of boreholes post-floods of April 2022, close to 50 boreholes in various parts of KZN. In Kwabeha, following the danger of day zero, we put 45 boreholes in one city alone. So it's an ongoing process in different hospitals. We selected Rahima Musa, Alan Joseph, Kala, Butterwood, Adelaide, Tower Hospital, Adelaide Beaufort, and several other hospitals, SS Gida, and many hospitals in the Eastern Cape, Midlands, all requiring boreholes because, first of all, the crisis of COVID, then the drought, and then challenges with load shedding. So we've put in boreholes predominantly, you know, in hospitals and schools, and of course then in the community and for the farming community.
Dr. Suleiman, I know that you're all about empowering young people and promoting human development, which are vital aspects of Gift of the Giver's work. Can you highlight some of the initiatives and programs the organization has in place?
We've been supporting a lot of students with bursaries over a period of time to make sure, you know, that they become self-sufficient and independent. We also initiated a program at school called Jumpstart, where over the years, unfortunately, it took a knock during COVID because schools closed, and we're busy restarting the program, where kids are given skills. They're empowered. They come with an idea, a business idea. They get business support in terms of a website, documents, a letterhead, a logo, and they get encouraged how to make business on their own, a skill they learn which they can take on later in the future. And some kids are earning between 500 and 1,000 a month, and some are earning 20,000 a month. So we have that program for kids. Besides business, you know, and bursaries, we're encouraging development in terms of discipline and sport. And several companies have now been offering us AstroTurfs, which we've been putting in the schools. And one of the principals I was with in 3 weeks ago said that my kids used to sit in the corner and smoke. Mm-hmm. Now, no place to sit them. They're all on the school field. In fact, on the sports field. And recently, they won all the tournaments as a top team. We did the same thing that's Patterson High. We did the same thing in St. Laurie's Pass and Desmond Tutu School. And we're finding the kids excelling in sport, in discipline, and human development. And these are the kind of things we need to still upgrade. In a school called TPA in Pietermaritzburg, there were kids with 170 kids with a learning disorder. And we went into the school. My wife is a counseling psychologist. Together with other educational psychologists, brought in a teacher with special education needs, skills, and supporting the teachers and the school trying to upgrade and create an opportunity for those kids. That's a prototype that we're still busy with, which we want to replicate in other schools. So there's a lot of programs going on. We got just too many projects. And, you know, we're busy with catch-up surgery. We're busy with, you know, helping with cataracts. So the problem is we've got too many different types of projects that require a lot of time. But, you know, under the circumstances, you can't wait because the need is so great.
No, you can't. Now, you speak about your wife being a psychologist, I think you mentioned. Now, one aspect of many of the situations that you're involved in is the trauma associated with the people in those situations that you support. So whether it's war-torn regions or places like Turkey, where there was that massive earthquake and you were present assisting people, just how much trauma are people going through and how do you lend a hand to those individuals?
We have our own counseling division. We've got volunteer psychologists, you know, that work with us. But over the years, especially besides trauma, there was a lot of trauma in Turkey. But, you know, the language is an issue. The government handles its own kind of cases with its own people. But our own teams offered counseling when they come back, and one or two sessions were done with them. And some of them, of course, do it at the workplace. As a standard procedure, counseling is offered to all our team members. Since the Turkey earthquake, we've changed the procedure for the next one, where there will be pre-travel counseling, counseling during travel, counseling on-site, and counseling after travel, because the Turkey earthquake has affected our people quite to a large extent. Seeing the destruction and seeing the suffering, emotional suffering of people, telling them, please, can you come to my building? Can you come to my building? My child is here. My wife is here. My 7 family members are here. And an ice fall, -5 degrees at night in that weather, are standing outside, hoping for help, desperation in their eyes. It has had an impact. The other impact, of course, is which we haven't addressed as a country, is the effect of COVID. There's huge fallout for mental health, which has affected healthcare workers, teachers, police people, you know, kids who lost their parents, lost one or both parents, family members who lost a father, a brother or sister, and sometimes more than one in the family, doctors watching how their colleagues passing on. We lost more than 1,500 doctors, more than 2,000 teachers, and, you know, business people having the loss of business and jobs losses. That has had a massive impact on mental health in the country. And as a country, we need to train many more psychologists. We're way behind in terms of the number of psychologists that we have, and we need to deal not only with COVID, the counseling things, and what I mentioned in the disasters. What about the fires? What about the floods? And what about gender-based violence and kids coming from broken homes? Kids have lots of trauma at home, but, you know, when they come to school, it's just impossible that your just ordinary teaching is going to solve the problem. You need lots of counselors at school. It's one industry or one profession that we start need to churn out hundreds of psychologists, as well as nurses and as well as doctors. It's all job creation. It's job creation, providing social services and urgent services for the country as a whole.
Now, being the single most significant humanitarian aid organization in South Africa, how do you manage to raise funds and garner support for the diverse projects that you undertake, both locally and internationally?
That's not difficult at all. You know, the spiritual teacher said, you will never look for money. As a policy, we don't have fundraisers. Fundraising is not part of our policy. We just leave it. People call us, you know, and we get called. We're in a fortunate position that we give the corporates a number. Tell them, we can't talk to you today, we can only talk to you in a month, because there's so many people waiting in the queue. The public supports us, school, pensioners, ordinary people, business people, professionals. You know, we have, and it's visible. You can see what we mean, because people like your station and other media travel with us. They come on site. It's visible. It's totally transparent. You can see how your money is being spent. And of course, recipients tell their family members working in corporate companies. So often we'll get a call. I'm in this corporate company. My granny called me, my auntie called me, you delivered a food parcel or some school uniform or something and helped them in some rural part or some part of the country. We're going to look at supporting you in some way. And that's how the word spreads. Of course, social media is big. Media coverage is big. But more than anything else, the recipients themselves pass the message on to family members in more affluent positions to say, they've helped us, you need to help them.
Now, before we let you go, Dr. Suleiman, I know that you are not celebrating these amazing 31 years, but what is the one word that you would like to give the people of South Africa today?
This is the greatest country on earth. No need to lose hope. No need to have fear and say people are leaving the country. More, hundreds of people are coming back into the country. We can build this country. We need to do this together. A message to political parties and the government. Don't use slogans. Don't use phrases that tear people apart, that turn people against each other, that brings racist tendencies. You are not a patriot if you do that. You will destroy the fabric of society. Every responsible politician and government and ordinary people and church and state and everybody, we should be promoting goodness, good relations, building things together and building a country. This is the greatest country on earth. We can fix it. It's not insurmountable. And let's stand together, hold hands together and do it together. Government, corporates, public sector, religious, NGO, everybody. It's our country. It doesn't belong to the government. It's my country, your country, and 65 million people own this country. It's our country, and we must build it together and look after it.
Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, founder, Gift of the Givers, we salute you, sir, and congratulations on those 31 years.